Hello and welcome to Men's Magazines on Sunsounds Radio at sunsounds.org. I'm your host, Robert Streit, and Men's Magazines focuses on the arts, culture, commentary, and in-depth news reporting is found in both the domestic and the international editions of GQ, Esquire, and Men's Health. In this edition, for the second week of February 2025, with a not-so-super Super Bowl behind us Chiefs fans and an extraordinary Super Bowl still lifting up Eagles fans into the stratosphere, there is much talk across football fandom regarding Kendrick Lamar's halftime show. People called it historic, boring, powerful, confusing, and everything in between. Given that Lamar won 5 Grammys just a week ago and a Pulitzer Prize for Music in 2018, I think this rap superstar and his performance deserve a second look. Today, we will do so with the help of our usual sources, GQ and Esquire, and support that coverage with reviews and reporting published within hours of the show by the Brown Daily Herald and the New York Times. It is Black History Month. It is the post-Super Bowl halftime show review, and it is everything Kendrick Lamar on this week's edition of Men's Magazines. Before we begin, though, I must mention that Men's Magazines includes adult content and, on occasion, language which some might find offensive. Having said that, I encourage you to sit back, relax, and enjoy Men's Magazines. All right, friends, as you know, our usual magazines, GQ, Esquire, Men's Health, whether overseas or here in the United States, they're published on a monthly or bi-monthly basis. And when something has come up, like the Super Bowl in between editions, if we want a little immediate context, we got to go to some other sources. So like I mentioned in the opening, we're going to start with the Brown Daily Herald, and then move on to the New York Times before GQ and Esquire. So here we go from the Brown Daily Herald. Kendrick Lamar's halftime show stuns with powerful commentary and raw vocals. The rapper's performance powerfully blended strong political messages with smash hit songs for an overall energizing show. And this is by Gabriella Wrighton, who's a senior staff writer. It was published the night of the Super Bowl at 11:34 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For most Super Bowl halftime show performers, the objective is to showcase their abilities, promote their new albums, or crowd-please with their greatest hits. For Pulitzer Prize-winning rapper Kendrick Lamar, the halftime show was much more. In his own words, "This is bigger than music." Breaking up a stunning Super Bowl victory by the Philadelphia Eagles, Lamar brought a mix of new and old hits together to create an inspiring, politically charged performance. Surrounded by dancers choreographed to resemble the American flag, Lamar delivered a coordinated, clear message against anti-black hate and violence. Actor Samuel L. Jackson featured in the show as a rendition of Uncle Sam, foregrounding the songs with declarations that America wants nice and calm, while calling Lamar's coordinated rap performance of Squabble Up too loud, too reckless, too ghetto. Lamar is no stranger to this level of storytelling, but it was refreshing to see his talent brought to full force during such an uncertain and tumultuous political time. The stereotype of African Americans being loud and violent has persisted for decades, bleeding into the personal and professional lives of black people nationwide. Despite this, it's rare to see a commentary on these issues allowed to be broadcast to millions of viewers worldwide. Politics aside, Lamar's live performance skills rank among the best of modern-day rappers. Even with the fast pace and heightened energy of the Super Bowl, every word and the accompanying message was clear. A medley of cleverly arranged newer songs combined with fan favorites like Humble and DNA made for an engaging, memorable performance, especially given the limited theatrics and special effects. Apart from Jackson's performance, the show was admittedly lacking in the star power audiences tend to expect out of a Super Bowl. The last few years have seen a number of featured performers, but most artists have opted for more extravagant, whirlwind performances. Lamar took the opposite approach, focusing on strong vocals and visually striking choreography with only one musical feature. Frequent collaborator SZA made a brief appearance for two songs, All the Stars and Luther, ultimately giving an unremarkable performance in comparison to Lamar. Of course, though, Lamar did give the people what they wanted after teasing Not Like Us throughout, even remarking, I want to play their favorite song. Lamar finally performed the Grammy-winning hit, bringing out all-star tennis player and Drake's former girlfriend Serena Williams to dance along to the diss track. Lamar stuck to his roots, delivering a bold performance on the biggest stage. In spite of challenging political circumstances, Lamar reinforced the ideas and beliefs of his music through a riveting and flawless vocal performance. Even the strongest performers have fumbled at the Super Bowl, and watching Kendrick Lamar succeed would delight any fan, new or old. All right, thank you, Brown Daily Herald. And now we're on to a slightly more critical review from the New York Times. And it's entitled, Kendrick Lamar Uses His Super Bowl Halftime Show to Settle a Vendetta. The first rapper to headline the NFL's biggest stage solo made his Drake diss, Not Like Us, the centerpiece of his set at the expense of a larger statement. This one's by John Caramonica. Of course he performed Not Like Us. In the lead-up to Kendrick Lamar's headline performance at the Super Bowl halftime show on Sunday night, most of the chatter focused on whether he would play the song that was effectively the knockout blow in his months-long battle with Drake last year. The song that became Lamar's signature hit and a generational anthem. The song that won both Record and Song of the Year at the Grammys just a week ago. The song that appeared to recalibrate hip-hop's power rankings, perhaps permanently. So, yes, Lamar played the song toward the end of the set, of course, building up anticipation with a couple of brief musical nods to it, toying with the audience's emotions and thirst. But what will always be remembered from this performance is not the musical choices Lamar made or the aesthetics of his choreography or the silhouettes of his outfit. What will remain is his grin when he finally began rapping that song. It was wide, persistent, almost cartoonish in shape, the grin of a man having the time of his life at the expense of an enemy. Lamar is perhaps the most sober of all hip-hop's contemporary greats, a ferocious storyteller who values tongue-tripping polemics and introspection. He is not exactly a beacon of joy. During the beef, he appeared to take on the dismantling of Drake as necessary homework. Not Like Us was a popped champagne cork, though. On the Super Bowl stage at the Caesars Superdome in New Orleans, it was hinted at, parceled out, and then finally launched into with a Lamar idiom. They tried to rig the game, but you can't fake influence. And then that smile. What a smile. His subsequent performance was jubilant and a bit naughty. When he rapped, "Say, Drake, I hear you like 'em young." He looked hard into the camera while motioning downward with his left hand as if patting the head of a child. He rapped the line, naming Drake's associates and their flaws. Given what the song contends about Drake, it refers to him as a certified pedophile, among other things, the decision to perform it was almost certainly heavily pre-litigated. Drake has sued the record label behind both rappers for defamation for releasing and promoting the track. And there were concessions made. Lamar did not rap the word pedophile, replacing it with a pre-recorded scream, and the camera switched away from him just before he landed the end of the sing-songy punchline, a minor. It was quite a spectacle. perhaps the peak of any rap battle ever. And that's not even counting the brief moment in which the tennis great and rumored former Drake paramour, Serena Williams, was on stage, crip-walking along with glee. Given that so much of Lamar's set conceptually came down to the question of not like us, he mostly kept things curiously low-key the rest of the time. Rather than pack in each of his hits, there was no All Right or Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe, for example. He leaned on songs from his most recent LP, Gen X. Man at the Garden, Peekaboo, and at the very beginning of the set, a bit of an unreleased track that he used as album promotion. SZA came out to perform two of her duets, Luther and All the Stars, but they felt undercooked and almost pointedly non-ideological. They could be read as a commentary on the sort of concessions artists, black artists in particular, and rappers even more in particular, have historically had to make to ensure broader palatability and acceptance. The halftime show had its first hip-hop headliner in 2022. Lamar himself underscored that point with the inclusion of a one-man Greek chorus, Samuel L. Jackson dressed as Uncle Sam and goading both Lamar and the audience throughout the set. Just after the two SZA songs, Jackson said, "That's what America wants. Nice, calm. You almost there. Don't mess this," which Lamar then interrupted with, "Not like us." This was Lamar's other winning stroke here, weaving the meta-narratives of the night's performance into the performance itself. Should he perform a song filled with accusations that has become the subject of a defamation suit? Can a black performer ethically perform at the halftime show of the Super Bowl, the crown jewel of the NFL, an institution that has taken on additional political valence after the Black Lives Matter movement and Colin Kaepernick's kneeling protests? After Squabble Up, Jackson popped up to excoriate Lamar. "Too loud, too reckless, too ghetto. Mr. Lamar, do you really know how to play the game?" It was both jeer and caricature, and so Lamar followed with Humble, during which his dancers, outfitted in red, white, and blue tracksuits, took on the formation of the American flag. At the top of the set, Lamar warned, "The revolution about to be televised. You picked the right time, but the wrong guy." But broadly speaking, though Lamar nodded to these larger struggles, he mostly limited his passions to his most personal one. And this was one of music's biggest stages, freed up for vendetta. At least one person who was part of the halftime show had a different idea of how to use the performance to advance an agenda. Toward the end of the set, he pulled out a banner combining the flags of Palestine and Sudan that featured a heart and a fist. Was this part of the performance, another level of commentary woven into a show already packed with it? In footage captured from inside the stadium but not broadcast, that individual was chased off the main stage just a few seconds after whipping out the flag. He ran around the field for a spell before he was tackled by a coterie of security guards in suits and carried off the field. That revolution, at least, would not be televised. All right, thanks to the New York Times. And now on to more from GQ and Esquire. So our last article referred to a rift between Kendrick Lamar and Drake, and now we're turning to GQ for the Kendrick Lamar-Drake beef explained. With a single guest verse on Future and Metro Boomin's Like That, Kendrick Lamar launched a public and increasingly personal beef with Drake that became one of the year's biggest pop cultural events. In May, Kendrick ended the battle with an apparent TKO, capping off a string of withering diss tracks with Not Like Us, a vitriolic slab of character assassination that went on to become one of the year's most inescapable pop hits. His performance at the Kia Forum in Inglewood the following month was widely characterized as a victory lap. As it turns out, it may only have been the closing of a chapter. This weekend, in a video clip announcing that he's headlining the Super Bowl halftime show in New Orleans this February, Kendrick referred to championships and said, "No round twos," a line that evoked a typically oblique yet peevish social media response from Drake. So, the story may not be over yet. Read on for a blow-by-blow account of 2024's most constantly evolving rap beef. March 29th, Kendrick Lamar declares war on an album that may be wholly dedicated to dissing Drake. Future and Metro Boomin's decade-in-the-making new album, We Don't Trust You, was already one of the most feverishly anticipated rap releases in some time. And on the song Like That, Kendrick delivers on that Christmas Eve energy with a guest verse that may as well be a Control sequel. But whereas that name-naming 2013 landmark was ultimately rooted in the spirit of competition, this time the gloves are off and the love is done. Kendrick sets the tone early, declaring that he's choosing violence and it's time for an opponent to prove that he's a problem. And though no names are officially named, a reference to Drake's song, First Person Shooter, and the album it lives on, For All the Dogs, means we have to consider this something more than a subliminal. On FPS, Drake brags about taking Michael Jackson's mantle for having the most Billboard Hot 100 number one songs, going as far as to hit the Beat It steps with a sequin glove in the video. Here, Kendrick finally, formally casts himself as direct opposition, ending his verse with a haymaker, referencing MJ's own longtime Cold War enemy, Prince outlived Mike, Jack. Sheesh. Kendrick and Drake have a complicated history with over 10 years worth of static. As fanfare around Kendrick Lamar grew, Drake was quick to embrace him, giving Kendrick his own interlude on his 2011 album, Take Care, and bringing him along for the subsequent Club Paradise tour, which also included J. Cole, A$AP Rocky, Meek Mill, 2 Chainz, Waka Flocka Flame, and others. But even on that song, Buried Alive, tension was in the air, with Kendrick recounting his thoughts while receiving game during a meeting with Drake, and then the more established in the industry at the point, and admitting to being irritated by Drake's success. Nevertheless, they linked up for the excellent Poetic Justice on Kendrick's seminal Good Kid, Mad City album, but the collaborative vibes stopped a year later after Drake was one of the many peers Kendrick Lamar named in his timeline-stopping call-to-arms verse on Big Sean's Control. A month or two after that moment, Drake dropped Nothing Was the Same, and in an interview with Elliot Wilson, slickly managed to give Kendrick his props while dismissing the verse at the same time. Fast forward a month to a cipher at the 2013 BET Hip Hop Awards, where Kendrick Lamar rapped Nothing's Been the Same Since They Dropped Control and tucked the sensitive rapper back in his pajama clothes. 2 months later, Drake hops on a remix of Future's Titanic Shit and ends his verse with, "Fuck niggas gonna be fucking niggas, that's why we never gave a fuck when a fucking nigger switched up." A little over 10 years later, a Future song sampling 3-6 Mafia, whose influence continues to have a stranglehold on the game, is once again the stage for a response. The decade in between has been rife with subliminals, references that could be reasonably taken as warning shots, but easily disavowed as harmless if either artist was asked. A spicy allusion to rappers using ghostwriters just months before that whole scandal broke out here. A charged, "I put him on my tour," reminder there. The language, element, deep water, 100, all reasonably discanon but never made official. to say nothing of Kendrick and his cousin Baby Keem's The Hillbillies, conspicuously aping Drake's Sticky Flow, or Drake saying he can't be like one of those guys who only drops albums every 3 to 5 years when announcing For All the Dogs. NFL star Marcellus Wiley once claimed he bore witness to one of the rappers taking it there when asked about the situation during an ESPN Sports Nation interview, but cooler heads prevailed. The rapper's team had the interview buried, and to this day, we don't know which of the two it was. April 5th to the 7th, J. Cole enters the fray and immediately exits it. In the midst of playing United States versus Soviet Union, though both rappers maintained a close relationship with Germany, i.e. J. Cole, Kendrick and Cole have yet to make a rap forum dream a reality with their long-alluded-to collab album. We'll always have this, though. But stayed in communication on Wax in other ways, like Kendrick handling hook duty on Cole's Under the Sun, or that time they did a beat swap and freestyle over each other's songs on Black Friday. Cole and Drake, meanwhile, have always been upfront about maintaining a real friendship outside of rap, but finally doubled down on that on Wax with not one but two collaborations last year, their first songs together in 10 years, and Cole joining Drake's nationwide tour for several dates. In another interview with Wilson, this time alongside Brian B. Miller, at the tail end of the last decade, Drake mused that the next 10 years would be the time for him, Kendrick, and Cole to really show up and prove who's built to last. Cole made the subtext plain on a 2021 freestyle over Drake's then-new song, Pipe Down, rapping, "Some people say that I'm running third. They threw the bronze at me, behind Drake and Dot. Yeah, them niggas is superstars to me." He leans into it even harder on his verse on Drake's first-person shooter with, "Love when they argue the hardest MC. Is it K-Dot? Is it Aubrey? Or me? We the big three, like we started a league." On Like That, Kendrick is feeling a lot less kumbaya, rapping, "Motherfuck the big three, it's just big me." Between that and dismissively observing that niggas clicking up earlier in the verse, some could argue that the song also functions as a J. Cole diss as well as Drake. But you could just as easily say the same about Cole's recent statements that he's out to prove he's the best as he preps his long-awaited album, The Fall Off, a Black Album-esque manifesto he's crafting to ostensibly end all debate. After all, that big three line on first-person shooter does end with Cole declaring himself Muhammad Ali, a sentiment he's been doubling down on in one stellar verse after another for the last few years. He clarified in an interview with Lil Yachty that he never once awarded himself the bronze medal, just merely acknowledged that it was a rampant perception. So in theory, the new Kendrick lines could be received by Cole as the same spirit of competition that he's been preaching. Cole would go on to respond to Kendrick with 7-Minute Drill, a diss track more notable for Cole admitting on it that he doesn't want to really go there with his one-time friend, with especially vicious jabs. As the internet spent the weekend debating if J. Cole's heart was really in it, by Sunday he would go on stage at his own Dreamville Festival to confirm just that. He publicly retracted his diss, apologized to and bigged up Lamar, and even vowed to stay out of it even if Kendrick should respond to Drill. So why do Future and Metro Boomin suddenly have issues with Drake after doing dozens of collaborations with him? We've gone hundreds of words without returning to the duo who delivered this moment. Future, the fourth face on that 2010s rap Mount Rushmore, and Metro Boomin, the super producer he's made some of his most potent music with. There's a deeper layer to Kendrick choosing a Future and Metro album as the stage to finally go at Drake. Metro has seemingly had his own problems with the 666 God. Late last year, he posted and subsequently deleted a tweet about his acclaimed album, Heroes and Villains, continuing to lose awards to Drake and frequent Metro collaborator 21 Savage's album, Her Loss. During a live stream not long after, Drake hilariously referenced the non-believers, the underachievers, the tweet and deleters, adding, "You guys make me sick to my stomach, fam." Despite trading a few more subliminal potshots across Twitter and IG, Metro downplayed any beef, saying that the issue was not deep at all. Still, when eagle-eyed fans took note of Metro unfollowing Drake on Instagram, the definitive 21st century signpost of an unamicable split, ahead of the album's release, it didn't take a hip-hop scholar to assume that, as Kendrick would declare, it's up. And for those wondering how a producer-rapper beef would even reasonably play out, Metro makes it clear by serving up a new creative peek on Like That, with an obscenely screw-face-inducing beat sampling 80s rap duo Rodney O and Joe Cooley's classic Everlasting Bass, alongside Eazy-E's classic Easy Does It, as well as a splash of Ridin' Spinners. In effect, Kendrick and Metro are following playbooks beloved by the likes of Jay-Z before them, or even Drake with Back to Back, in dissing your opponent on a song that's an undeniable banger whether people know the context or not. But why would Future, who has approximately 30 collaborations with Drake, including the 2015 collab album What a Time to Be Alive, and two fairly recent tracks on Future's last solo album, cede airtime on his new project to a noted Drake enemy? No one knows for sure at press time, but it's possible they have issues of their own. Despite their prolific collaborations, their relationship has had its rough moments from day one. Recall 2011, when an ascendant Future got an assist from Drake remixing the former's Tony Montana, only to publicly bemoan Drake refusing to do a video. And while they toured together in 2016, who can forget that time in 2013 when Future was briefly, allegedly booted off of Drake's tour for less than flattering comments about his music in an interview? Factor in the name of the album and Future's rap on the intro about someone who's his number one fan despite sneak dissing him on the side, and you don't need that big of a tinfoil hat to make the leap. Any opinions on the current status of Future and Drake's relationship is all baseless conjecture for now, but what is irrefutable is that rap beef is geopolitics. And we must pause here for station identification. You're listening to Men's Magazines on Sunsounds Radio at sunsounds.org. And now back to our GQ piece on Kendrick Lamar. One would imagine Drake, who on the chorus of a recent track cheekily wonders what Pluto, Future, would do in a certain romantic situation, answer not safe for work, wouldn't simply shrug at one of his most frequent collaborators releasing a project with space reserved for direct shots at him. That would be like 21 Savage letting Pusha T hop on a track. It'll be interesting to see how this all unfolds, but one thing we shouldn't lose sight of is that "We Don't Trust You" is, quite simply, incredible. Sure, beef is cool, but so is Future reverting to some of his most historically depraved peaks earlier on the track. Do not listen closely if you don't want to hear specifics of the X-rated scenario that may absolve him of one of his 20-carat rings. He's blacking out mostly everywhere else on the album even harder. 2022's I Never Liked You is a great album, but We Don't Trust You arrives immediately, battling for an even higher spot in his storied discography. The same can be said for Metro's beats. I yelled just as loudly as I did at Kendrick on Like That, later on at the surprise Rick Ross verse as he glides on the soulful escalating beat for Everyday Hustle, only for the beat to morph a third time as Future returns to take the reins. Metro's been talking this album up for the better part of a year, directly acknowledging the high standards set by his and Future's past work as a unit. They've cleared that bar and then some, shaking the rap game up in the process, securing a top slot for a summer outside in any best of lists, silencing all doubters with the music, casting oneself as a step ahead of the competition. It's energy the late great Mobb Deep rapper Prodigy would appreciate, which is perhaps why the album is peppered with gripping soundbites from some of his past interviews. Metro and Future would later spin it back with a second album, We Still Don't Trust You, which, while more R&B influenced, still had time to get in a couple more Drake shots, albeit sans Kendrick. April 13th, Drake hits back at Kendrick and everyone else with push-ups. 3 weeks later, we finally got a Drake response. Early Saturday morning, a song leaked to the internet through means that are still unclear. But after initial debate about whether it was real or an AI-constructed Drake facsimile, consensus on the internet landed on it being legit. Before Drake sent the final version, with a much better beat, to DJ Academics to premiere on his live stream. For about 4 minutes, over a dark and brooding beat that apparently originally sampled Junior Mafia's Get Money, Drake fires off shots, disses, and rebuttals to all the artists who have been coming at him since Like That dropped. Drake blessedly doesn't resort to any sneak disses that rely on fans to connect the dots. Names are named. He chides Rick Ross for jumping in when every song that made it on the chart he got from Drizzy. Alleges The Weeknd's right-hand man, Cash, is spending all his bread out there tricking. And he tells Metro to shut your bitch ass up and make some drums. He even appears to send a stray at Ja Morant for weighing in, rapping, shout out to the hooper that be busting out the gritty. I know why you mad. I ain't even tripping. Curiously, Future does not get called out by name, but Drake does respond directly to a bar on the We Don't Trust You title track, saying, I can never be another nigga number one fan. Your first number one, I had to put it in your hands. There's also a line referencing the Rolling Loud stage where Metro and Future first teased Like That, where Drake says shit might change if your BM kiss and tell. He doesn't go further, but do remember that the other person on that stage with them for that moment was none other than Travis Scott, who has two kids with Kylie Jenner. But the majority of the track's ire is reserved for Kendrick Lamar. Drake has several sophomoric bars attacking his smaller stature, calling him a pipsqueak. A pipsqueak and a so-called big stepper that wears size 7 men's. The main angle Drake takes, though, is on Kendrick's business relationship with his former label, TDE, and its founder, Top Dog, alleging that Top took a lion's share of Kendrick's profits and made him do lame pop collabs for money. Maroon 5 need a verse, you better make it witty. Then we need a verse for the Swifties. Top say, drop, you better drop and give him 50. The push-up theme plays off the jokes fans have been making about Kendrick being war-ready because he posts workouts on Instagram. Drake goes on to declare a more accurate Big Three would place 21 Savage, Travis Scott, or even SZA ahead of Kendrick, before resolving later that the Big Three is just him twice and presumably J. Cole. Cole gets a stray reference here, too, with Drake dismissing the adulation Cole gave toward Kendrick and the Like That verse at his Dreamville Festival last weekend. I don't care what Cole think, that dot shit was weak as fuck. Drake, and the original version of the song, daring Kendrick to drop the nuclear diss he's reportedly sitting on, or shut your mouth, alleging that Kendrick has had one for 4 years and still hasn't pushed the button. As direct as this Drake song is, the last few bars imply it's just a move to get Kendrick to reply, at which point Drake has more information ready to weaponize. But the blink-and-you'll-miss-it reference to Kendrick's partner, Whitney, I'll be with some bodyguard like Whitney, suggests Drake may not be considering the way his last high-profile beef turned out. In 2018, when he rapped to Pusha T that his crew would let it ring on him like Virginia Williams, Pusha took the name drop of his then-fiancé as an excuse to take the gloves off and reveal intimate details about Drake's own family. Is Drake intentionally baiting Kendrick to take a similar level so he can hit back even harder? Or is he once again underestimating his opponent? April 19th, Drake drops Taylor Made, an AI troll stunt taunting Kendrick to reply to push-ups. You gotta hand it to Drake. He has a wicked sense of humor. In the week since push-ups impacted, the disc climate has been clouded by a new, decidedly 2024 problem, AI. The ease with which imposters can use artificial intelligence tools to make a response initiating Drake. Kendrick, or whoever, coupled with push-ups, actually originating from a real leak first, has made everyone second-guess the validity of the response tracks that will follow. And with good reason. There have been a bevy of fake tracks in the last 6 days imitating both Drake and Kendrick. Or were they real leaks that both camps found it more advantageous not to claim? The biggest debate stirred up over a partial Kendrick leak that hit Monday, April 15th, with lyrics that were less than biting and an unimpressive beat. While Daylit, a rapper affiliated with Kendrick, immediately called it out as being AI, Drake's longtime OVO affiliate Hush fanned conspiracy flames by imploring Kendrick fans to keep the same energy about it being underwhelming when they find out it's real. Drake responded to Hush's post, laughing. April 30th, Kendrick crowns himself the biggest hater with Euphoria, a 6-minute Drake diss track. Just say his name and I promise that you'll see Candyman. After trying to apply pressure to Kendrick to respond following his push-ups leak a little over 2 weeks ago, Drake can reset the dot clock to zero. On an unassuming morning, on the most boring day of the week, Kendrick came in compelled by the spirit of 2024 Hater of the Year, Cat Williams, with a 6-minute diss track officially kicking this back and forth into high gear. First things first, anyone blanching at the runtime is not a real rap fan, or at the very least a real fan and student of this beef shit. 6 minutes is nothing. If you weren't outside for, say, the game lighting into 50 Cent for 15 minutes and something like 5 different beat changes, that's okay. Just say that and move on. Kendrick attacks Drake's blackness, or rather Drake's insecurities about his racial identity, an attack Rick Ross has been diving at headfirst and Pusha T deconstructed on his seminal Story of Adidon. He also, like Push and Ross before him, alleges Drake has surgically augmented abs. Kendrick also calls Drake out for dissing Pharrell and Pusha last year on Meltdown and in his Jumbotron video, pointing out that Drake never even formally responded to Adidon. On that song, Pusha accused Drake of being a deadbeat dad, and to hear Kendrick tell it 6 years later, despite the courtside seats and concert cameos, he isn't doing much better. But the real fun lies in Kendrick admitting that while all of these are worthy reasons to get at someone, he just plain dislikes Drake. The way he walks, talks, dresses, even the women he chooses to sleep with, a patently, hilariously unreasonable reason to dislike someone that also may open things up for Drake to double back on his Mr. Morale family angle, though. And it's for that reason why Drake and Kendrick's songs immediately register as a cut above J. Cole's attempt, because there's nothing performative or skill-based challenging going on here for sport, just pure disdain. To quote Mr. Morale himself, sometimes it ain't even gotta be that deep. May 3rd, Drake takes the gloves off with Family Matters. On push-ups, Drake rapped that all this beef directed his way had him feeling like the king of conflict, 50 Cent. So it's only right that he opens his Kendrick response video with a G-Unit spinner. True to the teases he's been seeding through various streamers, podcasts, and other affiliates all week, Drake comes to the battle with a fully loaded clip. Family Matters is essentially three songs in one on three different beats, and that's not counting the separate verse he used to announce the video's release on YouTube. On his Instagram, Drake raps over the Buried Alive instrumental, the Kendrick interlude that appears on his seminal Take Care album, mocking Kendrick's flow, calling him jealous, and pointing out that he brought him and that other ho, read A$AP Rocky, along on his Club Paradise tour as their first big look. And that's all just a cold open for the main event on Family Matters, a 7.5-minute diss track with an accompanying video. Let's get the ancillary stuff out of the way first. Drake is in a tough spot because he's essentially fending off shots from his own personal Sinister Six, but unlike push-ups, here the non-Kendrick bars he devotes to his other ops, Metro Boomin, Rick Ross, The Weeknd, A$AP Rocky, aren't as seamless and come off as distracting at best, at some of the laziest writing on the songs at worst. Hilariously, Drake opts to completely ignore Ye's attempts to shoehorn himself in the last week with a Like That remix, save for a stray play on words around Kim Kardashian's Skims brand. Most of the Sinister Six shots are on the second song, which accompanies images of a hearse in the video. Drake regurgitates jokes about Rick Ross's alleged past as a corrections officer and drops a clunker about Weeknd's music being played in the spots where boys got a little more pride. He also implies Abel's issue with him is over an unnamed woman. We know which woman is at the center of Drake and Rocky's beef, and Drake calls her out by name, although the average fan wouldn't catch it on first listen. Drake warns Rocky that even Fring would advise Rocky to leave Drake alone. Fring is Drake's nickname for Rihanna, a reference to her putting him on the Breaking Bad during the height of their romance. The nickname even inspired the name of his now-closed restaurant in Toronto. Interestingly enough, Drake seems too genuinely hurt by Future's part in all of this to say more than a bar communicating just that. But Kendrick versus Drake is the main card in this battle, and Drake gets right to it, with a visual of the Duckworth family van from the cover of Good Kid, Mad City being driven to an impound lot and crushed as Drake goes in over the beat he teased at the end of push-ups. Drake raps that he was trying to keep things PG, a reference to PG Lang, the company Kendrick co-founded with his creative partner and longtime friend Dave Free. The illusions stop being thinly veiled there, though, when Drake comes right out and alleges that Dave is secretly the father of at least one of Kendrick's children with his partner and high school sweetheart, Whitney Alford. So, yeah, gloves off. May 3rd. Kendrick responds immediately with bars at Drake's whole family, including an alleged daughter. Family Matters was barely up for half an hour before Kendrick fired back with Meet the Grams. It would appear that Drake walked himself into another trap, not unlike the one Pusha T set for him 6 years ago, baiting him to drop a diss that would justify a nuclear response that made going at family fair game. It seems safe to assume that Kendrick already had this track ready to go well in advance, perhaps not thanks to some mysterious OVO mole, but because, as he says in the opening lines of Euphoria, he could predict the angle Drake would take and planned accordingly. It's all part of a larger strategy. The Meet the Grams artwork is the full picture that Kendrick teased earlier on 616 in L.A. It shows those same pair of Maybach gloves along with a shirt, receipts, and prescription bottles, including one for Ozempic, prescribed to Drake. So to recap on Family Matters, Drake accused Kendrick of rampant infidelity, being too interested in living as a bachelor in New York to spend time or even post pictures with his family, and putting hands on the mother of his children, who may only be the mother to one of his children because the other was fathered by his close friend. And somehow, Kendrick manages to go 10 times darker, outspooking Mr. Scary Hours with a bone-chilling, whispery delivery over a sinister beat courtesy of The Alchemist on a song that addresses all the members of Drake's family. His son Adonis, mother Sandy, father Dennis, and an alleged 11-year-old daughter. Cue up the George Bush memes to hear Kendrick tell it there is a second hidden child. Rap fans, who had been growing impatient that Drake and Kendrick were merely jabbing and not letting haymakers fly, can rest easy. Kendrick takes it to the point of no return, musing that he wishes Dennis Graham wore a condom the night Drake was conceived, and telling both Drake's parents that they raised a man whose house is due to be raided any day now on Harvey Weinstein-level allegations. Kendrick alleges Drake keeps company with sex offenders, the same shooter Weeknd sang about on Future's album, and that their mutual famous friends like LeBron or Steph Curry would do well to steer clear of him before it all comes tumbling down. And that all comes before the third verse, dedicated to this heretofore unknown daughter, and the final verse that's addressed to Drake himself, taking him to task as a deadbeat man-child. Things are getting very ugly on both sides. It's unclear how it will progress, or rather devolve, from here. At press time, Drake has taken to Instagram to address only the claim that he is a second child, posting a picture of himself with the caption, "Can someone find my hidden daughter and send her to me, please? These guys are in shambles." May 4th. Kendrick spins the block again with "Not Like Us." On Family Matters, Drake dismissively rapped that he was headed on a long overdue post-tour vacation now that he unleashed his big guns on Kendrick and the rest of the Sinister Six. If that's true, then hopefully they have studios and Turks, because Kendrick just followed up his macabre open letter to the Graham family with another diss track, hitting Drake with 2 replies in less than 24 hours. Not Like Us is an impressive, strategical feat on several fronts. Most obviously, it applies back-to-back pressure on Drake, turning the tide in Kendrick's favor, suffocating all of the oxygen before Family Matters even had a chance to breathe, and aggressively putting the ball in Drake's court to hit back. But perhaps more crucially, it is a much-needed exhale after the Meet the Grams that also showcases Kendrick's range. Rap fans spent the last month asking Drake and Kendrick to skip the round one dancing stage and get to the actual haymakers, and when they actually delivered last night, it was a case of be careful what you wish for some. Kendrick's track is the more outright uncomfortable listen, but Drake harmonizing that Kendrick beats his queen is just as ugly. Still, even Pusha T mocking Drake's friend's poor health was an easier pill to swallow because of his delivery. Meet the Grams is just joyless. Just as Kendrick was in danger of losing the audience and being that kid at the lunch table who takes things too far, he invites everyone to a good old-fashioned L.A. block party with Not Like Us, which finds him dancing over a mustard beat that both sets can hit their walks to. To be clear, he's still alleging Drake is a sex pest. pest who keeps the company of bad dudes. The single art is an image mocking Drake's Toronto mansion as being on the sex offender registry. But with Kendrick writing to Mustard's Bounce, it's just a more compelling listen than Graham's. This song won't travel as far up the charts as Like That, but it's built to work in the same functions, down to the call and response, O-V-Ho refrain. And even more so than Euphoria, Kendrick reasserts that for all the conscious-minded poet laureate narratives that surround him, he can crack a good sophomore joke with the best of them. Take your pick between the likes of Trying to Strike a Chord, and it's probably A minor, bastardizing Drake's album title to call OVO certified pedophiles, or flipping the 66 God moniker to 69 God because he's into freaky shit, with an opening line that references the viral classic Call the Amber Lamps. Kendrick makes it clear from the outset that the content of his disses notwithstanding, this one will at least have some levity. Although the track is quintessentially L.A., Kendrick carves out time for a whole verse dedicated to Atlanta, specifically the argument that Drake is a colonizer, vamping on other cities for their style and swag, methodically listing out the various rappers he's gotten close to for street credibility, from Future and 21 Savage to Young Thug and 2 Chainz. While The Alchemist seemingly didn't know he was producing a diss track, Mustard posted on social media that he'll never turn his back on his city, and I'm fully loaded. And that's yet another big-time producer who has past collaborations with Drake, but is by all accounts siding with Kendrick. The support is extending outside of music, even. Kendrick's line here about Drake keeping his ex-flame Serena Williams out of his raps earned the song a retweet from her husband, Alexis Ohanian, whom Drake dismissed as a groupie on his 2022 track, Middle of the Ocean. May 5th. Drake hits back with The Heart, Part 6. Aretha sings, "Let Me See You Prove It," setting the tone for Drake's angle here that Kendrick's been hitting him with baseless accusations. The Heart, Part 6 is in full reaction mode to everything that's transpired over the last 3 days, including direct rebuttals to Kendrick's Not Like Us. It was clearly written in the last 24 hours. Drake sounds a little over it all, while nevertheless still promising that shit is about to get dark. This is now his second track in a row where he plainly states he'd rather be on vacation somewhere than holed up in cold Toronto writing disses. Drake, buddy, domestic abuse and pedophilia accusations are in the air. We've been pitch black for the last few songs already. May 12th. Beef over? One of the 10 more Kendrick records Drake snidely alluded to on The Heart Part 6 never came. Drake's defensive tenor on the track amidst the surging popularity of Not Like Us was enough for many rap fans, pundits, and publications alike to declare Kendrick the winner. Now, a week later, Drake may not be conceding defeat technically, but he's apparently calling it quits. Or is he? June 5th, Drake deletes every diss track from his Instagram. Are they still available everywhere that's relevant? Spotify, YouTube, etc.? Yes, and so is Family Matters music video, but Instagram is by far Drake's social media app of choice and his most consistent source of communication with the public. Him removing the tracks there is still notable. But is he signaling a readiness to move on or clearing the slate for a new phase? June 20th, Kendrick performs Not Like Us 5 times at his pop-out show in Inglewood. Kendrick's pop-out was more of a celebratory victory lap for L.A. and the deep-rooted culture that Kendrick proudly casts himself as the prodigal son of. But Kendrick didn't shy away from the inciting incident either. Through the 16,000 fans and countless more tuned in via an Amazon Music live stream, Kenny opened his set by performing his Titanic Euphoria diss in full, even tweaking some bars to acknowledge that Drake was just a couple hours away spending time at his new ranch in Houston. He wrapped 616 in L.A. to his black hippie cohort Ab Soul and then closed the show by running through Not Like Us not once or twice, but five times, the fourth of which saw him invite every L.A. hometown hero to the stage, from entertainers who you would think were cool with Drake, like one-time Toronto Raptor DeMar DeRozan, to Russell Westbrook, Steve Lacy, and pretty much every L.A. rapper in attendance at the show, save Tyler, the Creator. September 8th, Kendrick announces he will be the Super Bowl halftime performer. Just when you thought Kendrick's victory lap couldn't get any crazier or run any longer, the start of the 2024-25 NFL season also came with the announcement that Kendrick will perform at the Super Bowl, to be held in New Orleans in February of next year, earning that honor after the summer he's had makes a general statement about who the winner of this beef was in the grander court of public opinion. Oh, the drummer is drumming, and thank goodness for that. It's been quite the hour on men's magazines here at Sunsounds Radio and sunsounds.org. I know there's a whole history of chiding and beefing and one-upsmanship in rap. It's just part of the thing. But it sure escalated for those two into dark places and to lawsuits starting in November of last year, where Drake was suing Kendrick and their shared recording company, alleging all sorts of payola and grift, pushing Not Like Us into the stratosphere and five Grammys and all the rest of it. You'll have to do more research to get to the bottom of who really won or who's winning or who wants to win or who doesn't care anymore. But there's some context and history behind the Super Bowl halftime show. I hope you found it interesting, if nothing else, and I encourage you to do your own research between now and next week. I hope you find peace with anybody that you are in discord with. And I hope you take care of yourself and others. Between now and then, I'll be trying to do the same. Peace.